Hi, Gary.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm good.
Thank you so much for coming on Blogging Heads TV. As pretty much everyone knows, but I should say, partly for the benefit of people who will be listening on podcast and won't see the name above your head, you are Gary Hart. You two-term senator, I guess?
Yes.
And you, in 1984, I think, came very close to being the presidential nominee. I think maybe that one went down to the convention, unless I'm...
It did. It was. It ended up not being terribly close, but could have been.
Well, these days, going down to the convention is the very definition of close.
Yes.
Anyway, you're well positioned to comment on the presidential campaign, and in fact, you have a very obscure qualification that people may not be aware of. That although you're a Democrat and presumably will support the presumed nominee, Barack Obama, I gather that at John McCain's wedding you played some sort of quasi-official role. You weren't best man, but weren't you something?
I guess they're called groomsmen.
Uh-huh.
I don't know whether it's still that, but that's what it was then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
well, we may revisit that. Maybe you have some deep insights into McCain's character that we can pry out of you before this is over.
Well, I wish I did, but... All I can say is I met Senator John McCain when he was Captain John McCain. At that time, in the late 70s, 30 years ago, he was what's called Navy liaison to the Senate,
mm-hmm.
a senior uniformed officer sent by his service to provide advice to senators on issues relating to the Navy.
Okay.
And I've known him ever since, and we became friends, and he asked me to participate in his wedding, and I was happy to do so.
Do you think your friendship will withstand your voting against him, should it come to that?
Oh, I think so. He's been around, and he's had a lot of hard knocks. I don't think losing my vote's going to hurt our friendship.
You never know. maybe I can get you to say something that will doom your friendship.
No, I don't think so. I have no ill will towards him. I just don't want him to be president.
Well, that's a start. I'll try to get you to go even more negative than that. But first, I assume first of all, as I said, I assume you'll vote for the presumed nominee. Are you happy that he is now the presumed nominee? Would he have been your choice, Barack Obama?
He is my choice, yes. And I have been doing what little I can to help, mostly behind the scenes. But I recently spoke, for example, at the... Nebraska State Democratic Dinner, annual dinner,
mm-hmm.
and even though it was not specifically for a candidate, I made sure that the Nebraskans understood that we are the party of new leadership and new ideas and new proposals, and that I obviously felt very strongly that Senator Obama represents that.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of his prospects, another interesting credential you have is that you were the campaign manager for George McGovern in 1972. And one thing that is being said about Obama is that what he has, for better or worse, and some people think it's worse, is what they call the McGovern Coalition, which is to say, to caricature it a little, to say... low-income minorities, although in this case it's really not clear who gets the Hispanic vote yet, I think. But in 1972, you would think mainly blacks when you talked about minorities. So low-income minorities and then kind of, liberal elites, chablis-drinking elites. That at least is the caricature of the coalition that he can count on. And, of course, Hillary Clinton is one person who's been trying to make that case, that's why he would be in trouble in a general election. As somebody who saw the McGovern coalition up close, what would you say about that?
Oh, I think it's totally inaccurate. First of all, Senator Clinton's been claiming that she is the champion of the lower income and left out people. And the coalition that supported George McGovern was a very different one than the one that supported me actually in 84, 12 years later, and is currently supporting Barack Obama. I think the key isn't so much which pieces of the old Democratic coalition one receives. That's important. But generally, that coalesces behind the nominee. What's more important is, can you reach beyond the boundaries of the party and attract independent voters? And I believe every state that has permitted crossover voting or independent voting has, certainly the independent voters, has gone to Obama, which demonstrates, as far as I can tell, that he has a lot more appeal outside the Democratic Party than Senator Clinton, and that's the key to winning general election races. Keep in mind, in 72, which is quite a long time ago, the cultural revolution was going on, and the Democratic Party in the country was deeply divided over Vietnam and over civil rights and increasingly over women's rights and women's equality. The environmental movement was underway. I think those of us who are a bit older can kind of have an understanding of the turmoil that was going on in the country at large, but particularly in the Democratic Party, both in 68 and 72. And that was a much, much different time than we have today.
Mm-hmm. And when you say that Obama has a shot at the independent vote, is it possible to characterize that in demographic terms? I mean, how you conceive of the independent voter, or is it just too diverse demographically and varies too much state by state for you to have anybody in mind?
I think it's too diverse. It's, for example, in Colorado and in the West, independents tend to be fiscally conservative and socially progressive, if you will. They don't believe the government ought to be nosing into people's private lives or private business. On the other hand, they don't believe that the government ought to be spending money it doesn't have, which it's been doing under the current Republican administration hand over fist. So I think that's what's disquieted otherwise conservative independents in this part of the country. And I think they are looking for some new leadership that isn't deeply entrenched in the Democratic Party and that can reach beyond it. And I think that's the attraction of Barack Obama and this part of the country, and I would suppose a lot of other parts of the country as well.
Yeah, and I think that part of the country in particular, including Colorado where you are, is thought of as one of the places where he could steal a few states that normally might not wind up in the Democratic column and possibly compensate for a state that, or two that Hillary Clinton might have won, in her view at least, that he wouldn't win. I mean, is that your view, that really the West is the place where he could shift the shuffle the red blue lineup a little bit?
Oh, absolutely. And I think two things. First of all, I believe the older industrial states, which Senator Clinton has been winning, will vote Democratic. They are not anti-Obama. They just had close ties with the Clintons, and that's understandable. But they're not going to cross over and vote for John McCain. In this part of the country, the pendulum is swinging very dramatically toward the Democratic Party after a number of years. States like Arizona, which used to be rock rib conservative Republican, now have a Democratic governor. New Mexico has a Democratic governor. Montana has a Democratic governor and is electing Democrats to a variety of offices. Colorado is coming back into the Democratic column. I think we'll win all the West Coast states, Washington, Oregon, and California. So that's quite a combination.
Okay. And what about, I mean, this raises the issue of what I really think is a vulnerability. I mean, I thought, you know, the famous utterance about, you know, bitterly clinging to guns and religion, I thought was extremely unfortunate. I think could conceivably wind up losing the election for him. Certainly it's relevant to his attempt to win independent voters who might be vacillating between Republicans and Democrats normally. Well, first of all, what would be your estimate of how much damage he sustained there, how much work he has to do to make up for that?
Much less than yours, I think. What he was saying, it's clear in the context, he wasn't making critical comment. He was being analytical. He was trying to account to a group of supporters as to why it would be difficult for him to win some of those voters. And he was saying what an awful lot of political analysts, sociologists, and others have said: in the old industrial base, there are a generation of people, largely older people, who haven't made the adjustment, haven't been able frankly, or had much assistance from the government or anyone else to make the adjustment to a post-industrial information-based economy. Now, he specifically targeted a generational gap because those same people's children are finding jobs in the new technology economy. And the people left out, frankly, have been left out for a whole generation. The interesting thing, if I may, to hark back to 84, I was competing with Walter Mondale, and the same split happened in the Democratic Party at that time. I won about 25 states, and he won about 25 states. And the states that were benefiting, even in that period, in the mid-80s, from globalization and the information revolution, voted for me, and those that were being hurt by it voted for Vice President Mondale. And those, by and large, included those industrial states. So this is a generational transition, and I think it is tragic that an awful lot of people have been left out as we have moved from one economic base to another.
So in some ways, is it a split between, on the one hand, kind of internationalists slash cosmopolitans, and on the other, kind of nationalists by default? In other words, people who don't see themselves as benefiting from globalization?
Well, except I would quarrel with the intonation that internationalists are, quote, cosmopolitans or elites. There are an awful lot of people whose jobs, from agriculture on out, energy, technology, in states like Colorado that are totally dependent on international trade. We've got a lot of farmers and ranchers here who know that they're selling beef in Japan and all over the world. So I wouldn't think they'd call themselves cosmopolitans or elitists.
Yeah, although the irony is that, I mean, I guess, that if you associate Obama with the internationalists or the people who see themselves as benefiting from globalization, in the course of the Democratic primary, he and Hillary Clinton both found themselves playing a little bit of an economic nationalist note, and there's some controversy over how heartfelt that was in his case, and there was the whole controversy over his economic advisor supposedly saying to the Canadians, don't worry, he'll be on board for free trade in the end. But as for where he officially stands right now, it's a skeptical stance toward trade, toward international trade in some ways, and I guess more so than John McCain's.
I think what he is saying, can't speak for Senator Clinton, in those industrial states is, if we are going to negotiate trade agreements, they have to be fairer than the ones negotiated in the past, including by former President Clinton. And that always focuses, as you know, and I think anybody watching knows, on the issues of environmental protection and worker rights and worker safety. And that's a legitimate, those are legitimate grounds around which and on which to negotiate with foreign countries. We can't compete if they're using child labor and violating basic human rights standards in their employment, or if they're dumping all of their chemicals and toxic substances into the air and the water. Because we've made giant steps. We're not perfect, but we've made giant steps in both those areas, and it's legitimate for us to demand that our trading partners do the same thing. I think that's all Barack Obama was saying, and most Americans would agree with that.
Okay. Now, back to this issue of his sort of, you know, regular guy credentials, or his sort of, his patriotic credentials. I mean, this whole cluster of suspicions emanating from, and of course fanned by Hillary Clinton, but emanating from things like the bitter remark, things like what Michelle Obama said about, you know, the first time I've been proud to be an American, and so on. You would concede that whatever he actually said in San Francisco and whatever Michelle actually meant, he faces a little bit of a challenge on this front. And I'm wondering what you think he should do about it.
Well, you and I probably disagree over how big that challenge is. What's remarkable to me, having been through this, is that a fairly new, fresh face and voice has been a candidate for president for a year and a half and made so few mistakes. I can't account for you, but I know the media is always looking for a mistake.
Yeah.
And to me, the miracle isn't that he made the mistakes. The miracle is that he hasn't made more and bigger ones. I think those are fairly minor. I have known candidates who've blown themselves out of the water with one statement. And this is a man who's remained calm. He has never lost his temper, to my knowledge. He's never been reported to have lost it in private, even. He has demonstrated great, I think, maturity and balance and judgment and wisdom, frankly, all the things that you want in a president, and made very few mistakes. Now, if you want to pick on those three things and make a national campaign out of them, you can, but I would think you would lose.
You might. I mean, although if you had people make it on your behalf while yourself pretending to be more high-minded, you might succeed. We'll see exactly how McCain handles this. Now, you said you were giving the Obama campaign a little help behind the scenes. How much of that do you want to talk about?
Well, as much as you wish. I mean, it's not secret. Behind the scenes, simply because I have a day job and I'm involved in an awful lot of different projects. But by and large, it amounts to sending messages to the campaign leadership and management, ideas that they might pursue in events they could schedule, groups they could meet with, things that the candidate might do that he hasn't been doing, drafts of speeches, ideas for foreign policy, ideas for national security, which I've spent a lifetime studying, and helping in any way I can, and doing some surrogate speaking, blogging on the blogosphere and
in the Huffington Post? Or?
Huffington Post, anywhere else.
Okay, and on his, I mean, one of your areas of expertise is national security. Can I ask you a little bit about Obama's positions there? I think one concern of people who are attracted to his foreign policy views more than Hillary Clinton's, thinking that they were a little more... that he was working less hard to sound like a hawk, for one thing, and that he's more open to diplomacy and negotiation than she at least came off as. I think one disappointment of some people is that the way he's being caricatured in this context, especially as pertains to the Middle East, is moving him away from where they would like to see him. I mean, he is, you know, a good example is this this Hamas issue, where I don't know what McCain said about, I guess some guy from Hamas said something favorable about Obama, and McCain made hay out of that. But I think the fear is that he is going to become so defensive on these issues that he won't wind up being the kind of president that these people had hoped for?
Well, first of all, there is no protection against caricature. I know that from personal experience. And there's nothing you can say or do if someone wants to try to paint you as something you are not. That's part of the political process. On the other hand, you have to have confidence in the good judgment and common sense of the American people, despite some evidence to the contrary in recent years, that they can see through what's true and what's false. And I think Senator Obama has that confidence. And over time, and we've got time, people will see who he really is. The fact of the matter is he's in the mainstream of American, traditional American foreign policy, and Senator Clinton and Senator McCain are outside the mainstream with their talk about endless wars and incinerating countries that don't do what we want them to do. That's subject to caricature, if you will, and I think plenty of it will be going that way. If people are concerned about two endless wars and Senator McCain's commitment to at least one of those wars on an endless basis until we achieve an undefined victory, then I think they're not going to vote for John McCain, and they shouldn't. Barack Obama is simply stating what presidents since Franklin Roosevelt and probably all the way back to Washington have done, and that is using diplomacy before you pick up your gun.
Yeah. Well, I guess in a way my question is, when he's faced with these challenges by McCain and sometimes by Hillary Clinton, why doesn't he respond a little more aggressively? I mean, something it seems to me that he could say to McCain is, when McCain starts throwing out insinuations about Hamas, is, look, Hamas has, few allies more staunch than anyone who is in favor of this Iraq war, right? I mean, jihadi recruiters, including some associated with Hamas, are delighted that we invaded Iraq. They're delighted to hear us talk about bombing Iran. All of this helps them. I haven't heard Barack Obama go on the offensive in this way, and it seems to me he's playing mainly defense on this issue.
Well, I'd probably disagree, but it's a difference with a distinction without a difference, I suppose. He did say Senator McCain had lost his bearings, which I thought was pretty pointed. And this is a man who understands he's in a 15-round fight, and we're halfway through the first or second round. So I don't expect him to spend the next 8 months, 6 or 8 months, banging away. I think when the time comes and the occasion is right, probably in a face-to-face debate, you're going to see a tough guy. This look, he's not where he is because he's some kind of marshmallow.
Yeah. And have you discussed foreign policy with him and are fully satisfied? Or?
Not a great length, but I've watched what he has, listened to what he said. Unlike too many of the journalists, I watch his website very carefully for his speeches. Too many commentators, pundits, blabbermouths on the cable commentary shows keep saying, I don't know where he stands. And I personally would like to go through the television set, grab them by the throat, and say, have you ever typed www.barackobama.com? That's what he has been saying, and that's what he stands for.
Mm-hmm. By the way, if you feel like grabbing me by the throat, you can go ahead and do it. This is a very casual medium. It's not like real TV.
I didn't include you in the pundits.
No, I'm not a pundit, and I'm a blabbermouth, but I'm not a pundit, so you couldn't have been referring to me.
You're not a blabbermouth.
I think it's true that some of his position papers, and this won him some support, I think, in progressive circles initially, were were clearer than Hillary Clinton's, and you can go read the position papers on his website about the Middle East and so on, and they are very pointed and straightforward, and I guess what I'm saying is he's been a lot more careful about what he says, and perhaps not surprisingly, given the way some of the things he said have been taken out of context.
Yeah. I think we're winding down a very intense 3 or 4 months. Keep in mind, this man has been a national figure only since about the second week in January, and that's just about 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very short period of time to emerge as a national, let alone international, leader. I think he's done remarkably well. He's got another 6 months to win the presidency, and he will do whatever it takes within the limits of his own integrity.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, on this McCain issue, so you were a groomsman at McCain's wedding.
Don't make too much out of that.
I'm going to make as much as I can, if it's okay with you. But it'll ultimately be up to you how much I'm able to make. McCain, well, let me ask you this first of all. Leave aside this past association. If you just size McCain up as an opponent in a presidential election, what vulnerabilities would you go after? Not necessarily issues of character or personal vulnerabilities, but just how would you size it up?
Age will be a huge factor. The country is ready for a generational change of leadership in both parties, and the Republicans have given the country an older Republican. That's not a very, very good, wise step for one of the two major parties at a time when the country wants to move on and move forward. I think people believe, I know people believe, because I talk to enough of them, that we're stuck, that we're at very best going in circles, and in many ways stuck. And you and I both know what the list is. It's Iraq. It is people losing their homes and their jobs. It's the neglect of climate change, and the list just goes on. Mounting deficits, mounting casualties. It's a disaster. And so to nominate a man who not only is older, but wants to continue pretty much doing the same thing, seems to me a mistake of huge proportions. So if people want a third Bush term, John McCain will give it to them.
Okay. And what about the most commonly discussed, I guess, personal issue with McCain, aside from age, is his temper. And I've seen, there was one video a couple months ago about an encounter with a New York Times reporter on an airplane, and I previously on Blogging Head said he had screamed at this reporter, and I was corrected by our commenters, that actually it was more like he was kind of, you could kind of see him seething. I mean, the guy has a temper. I was just wondering if you have any personal anecdotes or any observations about that, either as a personality trait or as a possible vulnerability or including as something that could really go wrong on the campaign trail for him, conceivably.
On a few occasions, he has become, what should I say, intense, pretty much as he was in that scene on the airplane.
Intense again, with you personally?
No. Never. No, but I mean, when he's a human being, he does get tired. He, like all the rest of us, gets frustrated when he has to answer the same question for the 900th time, and John can become a little testy. So did Harry Truman, so did a lot of presidents, and it, in some cases people thought it was pretty good when they did that. I've never heard him raise his voice, I've never seen him throw anything, but I am told he is capable of both of those things.
Hmm. And I don't suppose you want to share any of those secondhand anecdotes with
me.
No,
I think they're all in the public domain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do get the impression he's pretty, a little tightly wound. Maybe I'm reading too much into it.
Well, you know, if you or I had spent 6 years in the foreign jail during wartime, we might also.
That's true. It might have affected my my development.
Yeah.
And that, you know, certainly that in itself is a big asset. I mean, just his service, his military service, including the kind of, this kind of heroic aspect of enduring that kind of treatment.
Yes. Well, another Republican nominee, Robert Dole, had wartime injuries, which he bears still. And it didn't, you know, people respected it and admired it and were grateful for it. But in the end, it didn't get him to be president.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of this? You know, I gather Bob Barr is trying to land the Libertarian Party nomination, and if he did it, he would be a more prominent, he's a more formidable figure than your typical Libertarian Party candidate. Certainly goes in with higher name recognition. I'm wondering, it's not, I mean, people tend to assume that a Libertarian candidate would take votes away from the Republican. It's not so clear to me in this case which way it would swing. Have you given any thought to this?
About 10 seconds.
Well, that's enough.
And I think pretty much what the common wisdom is, that the default position for libertarians is basically the Republican Party. So I would imagine if he's taking votes from anyone, he will take them from the Republican candidate and not Barack Obama.
Okay. Well, I've given 37 seconds of thought to it. And the only reason I hesitate to embrace that analysis is because two reasons, I guess. I mean, libertarians always have this side that appeals to a certain number of liberals and Democrats, which is, they don't want the government to get into people's personal lives and so on. But in addition to that, you know, there's kind of two kinds of libertarians. There's the Doves, or at least non-interventionists, and then there's the Hawks. And he's not the Hawk. I gather Bob Barr is the non-interventionist kind, and that way he's a little like Ron Paul, except less kind of crazy-seeming, at least to some people. And, you know, Ron Paul, I imagine, you know, he had this, and still has, I guess, a very devoted, if small, following. And I think a lot of his followers, if forced to choose if you ask who would they be voting for if they weren't voting for Ron Paul, I think some of them for whom foreign policy is the big issue and military intervention is the big issue would otherwise be voting for Obama. So that's the reason I think Bob Barr might be a little bit more of a wild card, although I don't know that much about him. That's just my...
I think if you examine Congressman Barr's voting record, you would not find a whole lot there you could be sympathetic with.
Okay. Well, I'm happy to hear that. In which case, I wish him great success in amassing support. You know, before we go, I was just wondered if you wanted to talk about anything you're doing these days. I know you've been active in a lot of circles, writing some stuff. I know you got back late last night on a plane from somewhere. I don't know where, but maybe it was...
I've forgotten. I think it was New York.
Yeah. I know, yeah, I've been there.
Well, I'm working mostly at the University of Colorado on two major climate change projects. One is called the Presidential Climate Action Project, and that is to prepare an agenda for the first 100 days of the next administration, whomever it might be. If the new president and the administration is serious about attacking this problem, a whole range of alternatives and priorities for them to undertake very quickly. And the second one is the kind of international side of that. Also, for the time being at least, chairing an arms control and disarmament group, the Council for a Livable World, and I'm chairing something called the American Security Project, which is a new startup composed of former office holders, former administration officials, and senior military officials from both parties to redefine what security means in the 21st century.
Okay, now that is under the auspices of who, that last thing?
Well, it's self-creating. It was an idea originally of Senator John Kerry's, and about a year and a half ago, and he put the original board together, and we've been adding to it and raising funds, and we have a website, AmericanSecurityProject.org, and some very interesting things on there, ideas for kind of breaking out of the partisan stalemate.
Okay, well, we will link to that. There are links to the side of these things on our website. We'll link to that. And I guess the last question is raised by this issue of global warming. You know, McCain is moving rapidly away from Bush on global warming. And I guess he would like to get as close to Obama as he can get without losing a lot of people to his right. And that raises the general question for McCain of, you know, of course, he's been under suspicion from a number of conservatives all along who don't consider him conservative enough. And I'm wondering, how much of a constraint do you think that is as he tries to compete with Obama on issues, you know, like global warming? In general, how much is what might otherwise be the sound strategic move toward the center by him, how much is that going to be constrained by the need to kind of hang on to a base that is kind of suspicious of him in the first place? Is that a big concern, or in the end, do they basically have no real alternative and the turnout is going to be pretty high and so on?
He is greatly constrained. We've talked a lot about the hurdles Senator Obama has to overcome. What's going on with Senator McCain's party is a deep behind-the-scenes division between the old conservatives and the new conservatives. The Ronald Reagan and post-Reagan Republican Party is a much different party than it used to be. The Republican Party used to be. It's composed of the religious right and of neoconservatives who are unilateralists and interventionists, and libertarian tax cutters who don't care anything about balancing the budget. Now, in all three of those areas, that's a radical departure from the traditional Republican Party. And the distrust with John McCain is he's from the old Goldwater Conservative Party, And the new Karl Rove, George Bush Conservative Party is a much, much different party. And it doesn't trust John McCain on some of these issues. And he's walking his own tightrope inside his party. And when he tries to break out of that those handcuffs he's in, he becomes suspect by one wing or the other. This has been not nearly commented on enough by the political analysts who are transfixed by the contest on the Democratic side. But between the two parties, the Republican Party's having a much, much deeper struggle.
Okay. And you think these people, they might just stay at home and vote for nobody, even if they, even if there's no alternative they find attractive?
Or Bob Barr.
Hmm. Well, God bless Bob Barr. you've convinced me that he's a fine American and a viable candidate. Okay. Well, thanks so much, Gary. I appreciate
Bob,
you taking the time.
Great pleasure.
I hope that when you see this on our site and read the thoughtful comments that our commenters leave, you'll be willing to do this again,
sure.
Maybe with somebody other than me. But
No.
No, I'm adequate, really?
You're a good interlocutor.
Well, that's
whatever
that
means.
Nice of you to say that. Not everyone agrees. But also, if there's somebody, should it be the case that in your heart of hearts there's somebody you'd rather talk to than me, just send me their name, and we will mobilize the vast financial resources behind this operation.
I can't think of anyone else, and as I've told you in person, you are a brilliant writer, so I've enjoyed it.
Well, I think that's absolutely the note that we should end on.
It's fine with me.
That's very nice of you to say.
Not at all.
And I also want to thank your son John for providing free tech support. I've been looking for that all my life.
here he is, and he's employable at the right price.
Okay, well, we will join the bidding war for his services. If you can just ask him to press the stop button.
The stop button, okay.
Yeah, then we'll be fine. And yeah. Thanks again.